Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's very special T20 World Cup themed episode of TCCP is none other than Leicestershire County Cricket Club's recruitment analyst extraordinaire, Mr. Dan Weston. So Dan, first things first, mate, an absolute pleasure to get you back here on the podcast for tonight's show. How's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, great to be back here, Aaron. Yeah, thanks so much for having me again. Been a good day today. Probably watched the Sri Lanka game against Australia was a little bit more competitive than I thought it might be, or at least for the first sort of half of it anyway. So I watched that and I've just been doing standard recruitment work and a little bit of work for one of our guys at Leicester as well. So yeah, been a good day. Been a good day.
It has indeed. And before we get into the main bulk of today's show, listeners, for those of you who aren't aware, it was quite a big day for Leicestershire County Cricket Club today because a certain overseas phenomenon was signed by the Running Foxes ahead of the 2022 Vitality T20 Blast. And for those who aren't aware as well, this guy is one of my absolute favourite players in world cricket right now, Ramanullah Gurbaz, the Afghan opener. He's such an enterprising, destructive and hard-hitting talent. Dan, if you just could take us through it briefly, how did this move come about to Grace Road?
Well, he's a player that I've been watching for quite a long time, probably about 3 years or more. And so it's just a question of eventually a player in the right place at the right time, I think, really. So we had a vacancy in that sort of that skill set, and he was top of the list, really, and delighted, absolutely buzzing to have him as a running fox for next year. As you say, opening batter and also a decent keeper as well. So that's two strings to his bow. 360-degree player with, as you saw the other day, a lot of power when he wants to use it. And I think that when he played for Afghanistan against Scotland, that was almost like the most restrained that I've ever seen him play. And he still hit four sixes in 30-odd balls. So, I'm so excited that I think a few teams are might be a little bit worried about him for next season, hopefully, which would be a good thing for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be honest, I'm not looking forward to that trip, if we do make the trip to Grace Road, or indeed when Leicestershire do come to Edgbaston, because he's such a wonderful talent. I remember it was early this year, it was in the Zimbabwe series in Abu Dhabi. He scored 87 from 45 balls, was smashing sixes for fun. He's such an enterprising talent, and I don't want it to sound like the Ramanullah Gurbaz fan club on here tonight, but as you can all tell, we are both absolutely delighted. I love him. I think he's a fantastic player. And again, it's a really, really shrewd piece of business. He's someone who I think in the wider cricketing fraternity, we're all aware of, but I don't think that many people would have expected him to sign so quickly in county cricket. So hopefully that will pay off heading into the 2022 T20 Blast. But of course, Dan, we aren't here to talk about Ramanullah Gurbaz as much as we could all night long because he's a sensational talent. We are here to talk about the T20 World Cup. So far, we're into the second week now of the tournaments, the first week of the Super 12s. What have you made of England's performances in particular? We absolutely dispatched the West Indies in Dubai, annihilated Bangladesh in Abu Dhabi. How impressed have you been with England's performances in the Super 12 so far?
Well, there's not been much to fault them, really. The thing I like about England, I mean, I've been pretty vocal before saying that I'm not 100% sure about the players that they've selected, but strategy-wise, you can't really fault them, I don't think, in terms of... They're obviously very, very aware of the fact that intent is required, boundary percentage, or winning the boundary percentage count in a match is crucial. I've spoken about that a lot of times. And they've got a kind of mantra, that style of play, a brand, if you like, that will do that, and fair play to them that they've obviously done that in both games so far. Strategy wise, there's probably a few little things you can quibble at, like I'm not a big buyer of using Adil Rashid in various phases. In terms of, I would use him more as just that kind of middle overs operator, if you like, rather than, I think Morgan's getting a bit too funky with that sort of usage of him. But overall, like you would say, you look at their strategy and you think, yeah, they're pretty much there, and I think probably at this stage the team to beat, I would say.
Oh, interesting. We're definitely up there. I would agree with that, and in particular, Owen Morgan's captaincy. Just if we could have a quick word about that, Dan. How impressed have you been, in particular in that first game? What a masterstroke that was to bowl Moeen Ali in the power play.
Yeah, and this stuff's all to do with matchups and stuff. Now, yeah, Morgan, I think is a good captain. Whether he's I go as overboard as a lot of other people is perhaps a different argument. I think he's quite analyst driven. But yeah, if you're willing to listen to an analyst, that probably puts you in the top 10% of captains anyway. So yeah, the captaincy's been good, but yeah, like I said, to be honest with you, a lot of people give captains credit when captains are making kind of like minimum standard required decisions, if that makes sense, like bowling an off spinner against left-handers or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But because so many captains are, I think, quite mediocre, the ones who do that get a lot more praise than maybe they merit. But yeah, he's doing a good job. Obviously got something to prove with the bat, though, having had a miserable year so far. So he needs to captain well, obviously, to kind of merit his place on the side.
I do agree about the batting. It is something which has been a little bit, you know, underwhelming compared to recent Owen Morgan performances in past years. But with that being said, with Owen Morgan, he's always one game away, I think, from a big score. So who knows? We've got Australia, big occasion, at the Ring of Fire on Saturday the 30th of September. Who knows? We could see an Owen Morgan masterclass. We do wait and hope that happens in anticipation. But talking of Owen Morgan and the England squad, and I suppose the wider county circuit as a whole, Dan, in terms of this year's World Cup, who do you say has been your standout county player so far? Can be England, can be overseas. Who do you say has really captured your attention in the tournament so far?
It's an interesting one because I wouldn't say there's a lot of players who captured my attention, because I think the vast majority are ones that are quite known quantities on the whole. Probably two players I would say stand out a little bit. One would be a guy who's played county cricket, but who isn't a county cricketer at the moment, and that is Mark Watt. I think he's been fantastic for Scotland. Missed out narrowly on the fourth one for 23 in a row yesterday, which was would have been incredible. I've been impressed with him, but he was kind of like someone I knew a lot about anyway, and was on my radar to some extent before this World Cup. And the other guy, I mean, this again, they're known quantities, but someone who's come back into the England squad and done really, really well since he came back in. And I'm not sure necessarily whether England would have picked him in the first game if it wasn't for Mark Wood being injured. And that's Timau Mills, who's been so good. And his death bowling numbers, you know, a lot of people are giving him coverage for that now, and they're so good. And we've seen him bowl well already in this tournament, taking 5 wickets so far. So, yeah, we're really pleased for him to get back in the England setup and do well, do what he does. And he's doing great at the moment. So that's been great for him too.
It has indeed. And we'll talk about Timau in due course. I just want to touch upon Mark Watt as well. He has had a fantastic tournament. So, so unlucky. Imagine if he had completed the quadruple of 1 for 23.
Yeah,
it would have been incredible for the cricket badgers among us. And just another associate player who for me has definitely, you know, had an excellent World Cup so far. David Visa for Namibia, the way in which he's just slotted into that Eagles batting lineup so seamlessly. I think he's hit 8 sixes so far for Namibia in the tournament so far. So David Visa as well has been absolutely brilliant, as have Namibia, and we'll touch upon them at some point in today's podcast. But just honing in on Timau Mills, because he's had so many injuries. He had chronic back problems, didn't he, all the way back when he was starting his county career with Essex. Dan, how impressive you've been with Timau, in particular at the death. You alluded to it there. That is his real craft, isn't it? In terms of executing the Yorkers, the slower balls, the slower bouncers as well. Absolutely sensational. So what have you made of Timau's performances so far in an England shirt in this year's World Cup?
Well, I think he has two kind of unique skill sets, or not unique, but like points of difference, if you like. Well, three, if you include the fact that he's a left armer, where, you know, most teams are, if you're talking about in franchise cricket, when you're an auction or draft, you do generally pay a bit of a left armer tax, if you like. This is a kind of a known phrase that we talk about a little bit. But the kind of unique things that, or points of difference that he has, is one, he bowls back of a length a lot more, or shorter lengths than a lot of death bowlers who will try and go Yorker heavy. But the problem is, obviously, the margin for error for Yorkers is not a great deal. So if you end up going either side, you go slot or full, and you're going to get punished. So he's kind of got a more of a unique style of bowling and lengthwise at the death. And also, what I like about him, and Adam Milne kind of did that to some extent for us at Birmingham in the summer, was that he has this variation. So when you've got a bowler who's bowling 90 plus miles an hour, and you've got a guy, and he can still do a slower ball, let's say 70, that's a shock and awe thing. And it's having that 20 miles an hour difference when you're expecting a ball that could potentially break your hand or something like that, and then it goes slower. That's a big difference to say a guy who's got a stop ball of 80 and then a slower ball of 70. Do you know what I mean? So having that kind of ability to kind of, yeah, so bowl a ball which could do a lot of damage, or then a slower ball as well, which is 20 miles an hour slower, is really a really good point of difference, I think, for him.
It is, absolutely. And I love the description, shock and awe. It's such an apt description. It really is, because if you are expecting Tamal to come in and bowl that 90 mile an hour heat, you are expecting, as you said, broken hands, broken fingers. And then the ball just, you know, comes ever so slowly. It was the ball to, I think, Mustafi Zor in particular. Fantastic, fantastic deception from Tamal Mills. And the real key thing which has stood out to me so far, in particular in that Bangladesh game, you rightfully said it, Dan, that back of a length bowling. And that wasn't just Tamal Mills. It was the entire England bowling attack really adapted to conditions quite perfectly in that game. They adapted much better than Bangladesh did. Bangladesh went full in length and got rightly punished. So yes, so far, so good for the Three Lions and a Crown. But yeah, it's the big one on Saturday, isn't it, Dan? England, Australia in Dubai. Yeah. I'll get your prediction on this later, but just heading into that game, how confident are you of an English victory?
I'm pretty confident. I think that Australia, their batting lineup doesn't hold a lot of fear for me. I know that Warner and to a certain extent Finch batted well today against Sri Lanka, but I don't think Sri Lanka bowled well. I think Sri Lanka really actually let themselves down compared to their performances so far in a tournament with the ball. And obviously they missed a routine catch behind the stumps quite early on in the power play as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that Sri Lanka almost like let them play themselves into a little bit of form. I'm unconvinced that the Warner and Finch aren't on a bit of a decline, a longer term decline. They're both in their mid 30s now. I don't hold a lot of fear for them. I'm not a big fan of Mitchell Marsh, particularly against spin bowling. And probably the best thing for England is that with Australia's batting performing well, it means that they've got no chance of putting Josh Inglis back in the team, which would have been Inglis for Marsh or Inglis for Wade or Inglis for Smith or Inglis for anyone apart from Maxwell is a massive upgrade in my view. I'm pretty sure they'll go unchanged, and that helps England in terms of that selection decision.
Well, hopefully. And just remind me quickly, Dan, who did Inglis play for in the 2021 Blast?
I think it was Leicestershire.
I think it might have been. And he did quite well, didn't he? What was he, the leading run scorer in the tournament?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's without even a knockout matches as well. I mean, imagine how many runs he would have scored if there was knockout matches.
That is true. And to be fair, we owe Josh Inglis. I'm talking we Warwickshire now, in particular, for that 118. That got us through to the quarterfinals against Worcester. So, yeah, Josh Inglis, hopefully, to be fair, I'm not sure I'd want England to face him on Saturday, because he is a seriously, seriously talented cricketer. But even so, that is going to be a fantastic game, and we'll get to our predictions towards the end of the show, Dan. But I alluded to it a little bit beforehand, and that was the surprise packages of this year's tournament. There's a lot to choose from. Now, just for the listeners out there, we'll be splitting this into a team perspective and a player perspective as well. So I think it's only right we start with the team. And Dan, I'd love to know your thoughts first, really. Who would you say has been the surprise package for you? Would you go with a Scotland, Afghanistan? Would you go with the Mighty Eagles, Namibia? Who would you choose for your surprise package of the World Cup so far?
I think if you'd asked me this 3 hours ago, I probably would have said Sri Lanka, because after they played England in the summer, I was not a buyer of them at all. I thought they were absolutely horrendous against England in the summer. But they have made a few tweaks. They finally got rid of Chandler Mal, who's I don't think suited for white ball cricket. And they brought in Asalanka, who's been great. Their bowling is, I think, still a bit raw, but they've got a higher potential in their bowling, with Hasaranga leading the attack, with Kamira as well. So they've done well, but I think we'll give it to Afghan, because But once they're my boys, obviously, with Romanella and Nav at Leicestershire. But also the way that they play, the brand of cricket that they play, I love it. I love it. The high intent from the start, the top three of Shahzad and Zazai, and then Gurbaz at three. I mean, Gurbaz is not usually playing number three, but they've obviously brought Shahzad in back into this for this World Cup. Usually it'd be Zazai and Gurbaz opening. It's just a top three packed with intent. And then we've got lower down, you've got Najibullah, who doesn't always play the way that he did against Scotland. He can be quite a bit tied up a little bit sometimes, but that was really positive from him. Mohammed Nabi and Karim Janak can also bat well down the order as well. Obviously, Rashid Khan is a lower order hitter as well. So there's plenty of good hitters in Afghanistan. I love the way that they're sort of strategy, the way they're shaping up the brand of cricket that they want to play. It's positive, it's fun, it's good to watch. And yeah, while they've only played one game in the tournament, I can't wait to see how they fare against New Zealand, India and Pakistan. And it genuinely wouldn't surprise me if they beat at least one of those three teams.
Absolutely. And again, it comes back to that key asset of T20 cricket, and that is the brand, the identity with which you play your cricket. Afghanistan don't play with any fear whatsoever. No. And I know we have only seen them in one game so far, but that top three in particular, I love it. I love Hasratullah Zazai. I sincerely hope we get to see him in county cricket soon. Again, he's a phenomenal, phenomenal talent.
Yeah.
As is Shahzad. He's done it for years. He's a brilliant player. He's a fantastic player to watch. Took a brilliant catch as well in that particular game, diving low to his right. And then, of course, your boy now, Dan, Ramanila Gurbaz. So, yeah, signs are looking pretty positive for Afghanistan. In terms of my surprise team, for those who know me outside of the podcast, you'll probably know who I'm going to select here, but I have to go with Namibia. Namibia heading into this year's tournament were the lowest ranked and still are the lowest ranked. They're 19th in the world in the ICC rankings. No one gave them a chance to even make it through their group, with the likes of the Netherlands and Ireland in there as well. Namibia were meant to be the bottom feeders of Group 1, and they somehow got through, and it's such a fantastic, fantastic story. And as if that wasn't enough, last night in Abu Dhabi at the Sheikh Zayed Stadium, under the lights in front of their family, their friends, the likes of Ruben Trumpelman, the likes of David Visa, JJ Smith finishing off with a six as well. I absolutely love this Eagles team. And Dan, just before we get into the surprise package from a player's perspective, what have you made of the Associate Nations? I know we've seen the likes of Oman, Papua New Guinea beforehand. The Netherlands, in all honesty, I did expect more from them in this year's World Cup. Things didn't quite click. But what did you make of the teams that have gone out so far, as well as the likes of Scotland and, of course, Namibia?
So Namibia, we'll go to start with, obviously, because you mentioned them initially. I actually thought that group was quite well balanced to start with, because Namibia had done really well. They in some warm-up matches. They played a lot of warm-up matches in South Africa against like Titans and also South Africa A. And their results in those warm-up matches were pretty good. So I thought they prepared pretty well for the tournament. Netherlands was... I agree with you. I was really disappointed with them. Their batting, I think, needs a lot of work, because they're not going to win the boundary count in matches with their batting group that they've got, unfortunately. I was quite surprised they left out Tobias Vissé from their squad, because he's someone who actually can play that match-winning knock. Yeah, he might be inconsistent, but I mean, as a Bears fan, you'll know about Ed Pollock over the years for you boys. I know he's not there now, but in terms of that match-winning innings, that those guys, the intent merchants, can really play. And I think as well, when you're an underdog, in which obviously Netherlands are to some extent, certainly it would have been if they'd have qualified for the Super 12s, you want the match to be as high variance as it possibly can be, because you're not expected to win. So, you know, it's like a football match. If I don't know, let's just say my local team played Man City, they would absolutely get thrashed 30-0 or something in a 90-minute match. But in a penalty shootout, they might have like a 15% chance of winning or something like that. So you're making it high variance. And that's what a cricket team, when they're underdogs, need to do. So I was quite surprised that they omitted Vissé. I've done a lot of work actually on some Associate Nation preparation before. And what struck me was that a lot of the teams are quite bowler heavy in terms of they've got good bowlers, but they lack batting quality and particularly batting power. So on that basis, I was pretty surprised to see Ireland miss out, because in Paul Sterling and Gareth Delaney, they do have two players who can hit and hit really well and play those high strike rate match winning innings. So that was a bit of a surprise. I think Sri Lanka and Bangladesh were always pretty likely to get through. Scotland did well in the initial stages, for sure. That win over Bangladesh will probably live long in the memory. But I think now we're kind of seeing maybe the against this even higher level of opposition, that might be a bridge too far. But fair play to them. For them to get into the Super 12s is a massive achievement in itself. So the Associated Nations, it was pretty much as I expected. I think that there's a lot of teams, if they could get like two or three good batters into their group. Obviously, Namibia did that to some extent with David Visa coming in at the last minute. So that's been a massive boost for them. If there were a couple of players who could do that for some of the other Associate Nations, that would be a real boost for them in terms of competing with the big boys, if you like. But yeah, not massively surprised by a lot of it.
Fair enough, Dan. Fair enough. I mean, the only surprise, I suppose, has been Namibia, but it's a wonderful surprise. It's a fantastic surprise for the global cricketing fraternity, because this is a nation of 2.5 million people. In the entire country, there's 5 cricket grounds. It's a staggering story. It really is the perfect underdog tale, which has underpinned and kind of captured the imagination in this year's World Cup. And I am a Namibian cricket advocate. I absolutely love the Eagles. I love their captain, Gerhard Erasmus. Michael van Lingen's a fantastic young player, as is Ruben Trumpelman. JJ Smith, I think, should be playing more franchise cricket. If you look deeper into his stats, he's a wonderful, wonderful power hitter, can finish off an innings single-handedly. So yeah, I've loved watching Namibia. I really have. And to be fair with the Associate Nations beforehand, I know Ireland now are a full member, and they're the only one, actually, other than Zimbabwe, that didn't make it through to the Super 12s, but the Chevrons, unfortunately, weren't allowed to compete in this year's competition. I do think the Associate Nations, for the most part, definitely gave themselves a good showing in this year's World Cup. Oman as well, can we just say, Al Emirat as a venue, gorgeous. The amount of work that's gone into Muscat as a cricketing venue, I hope that we see a lot more cricket there in the future. The backdrop is stunning. The ground itself has decent-sized boundaries. The locals were brilliant as well, in particular for that game against Bangladesh. So, all in all, I've loved the T20 World Cup so far. Okay, I get at times, and Dan, you may touch upon this actually. At times, teams have been a little bit cautious, haven't they? That's the only thing that I would say.
Yeah, I think that the best thing for me about this is the extra exposure that these Associate Nations or Small Nations are having. And I think this has to continue, because the only way they're ever going to get better is if they're playing more and more matches in big grounds, on big TV, or big TV occasions against the big teams. It's as simple as that. They're not going to get better playing against each other. They're going to get better, expose themselves to better players. And I'm actually quite a big advocate of qualifying. Everyone has to qualify for a World Cup. So, you know, like, for example, in football, the World Cup or Euros, England will play like Andorra or San Marino or something like that. And people might turn around and say it's pointless, but actually no, because some of these teams have... I can remember some of these teams. When I was a child, England beat Turkey 8-0, and now Turkey are at major tournaments, for example, on a regular basis. So this teams do improve. Teams do improve a lot. And it's important that these smaller teams get regular exposure against the bigger teams. And while that might not be necessarily commercially preferable for some of the bigger teams, I think it's important to have that level playing field that the smaller teams get that opportunity.
100%. And we'll be seeing that, I suppose, well, not just this year, with the Netherlands touring South Africa. I believe that's in late November until December, which will be fantastic for Dutch cricket. And then England repaying the favour next year. We're off to Amstelveen, which will be a fantastic series. Lots of county cricketers involved for the Dutch as well. I can think Rulla van der Merwe, your boy Colin Ackerman as well, yeah. Dan, someone who exists recurringly in my nightmares as a result of that 7-for-18 in 2019. Really? Never forget that Wednesday, the 7th of August, 2019, 7-for-18, wow. World record. It's still in there. That will never be erased. That will never be erased. But no, that'll be a fantastic series. And again, I completely echo those views. Associate cricket, give it a platform because it's brilliant. It really is. And again, that's an entire podcast in itself, but it really has been great to see the Associate Nations giving themselves a good showing in this year's T20 World Cup. But then on the flip side, we mentioned their surprise teams. Who do you say has been the surprise package from a player's perspective? We've seen a lot of excellent individual performances. Who would you say has been your real standout or surprise package in this year's tournament so far?
Oh, that's the surprise package, I would say. Well, that's a tough one because obviously there's a lot of cricket still to be played. I think Asalanka, since he's come into the Sri Lankan team, has been a real revelation for them. And also Rajapaksa. Neither of these guys played in the summer against England. I think Rajapaksa had some fallout with the board or something like that. And both these guys have come in and kind of catapulted this one-dimensional lack of intent batting group into someone, a group which actually can hold some fear for people. I know we haven't seen the best of Vizca Fernando so far in a tournament, but he's another player of some pretty high potential as well. So Sri Lanka now are starting to have the makings of a team that can hit. So those are surprise packages. Now, Asalanka, if you look at his numbers at lower levels or domestic cricket in Sri Lanka, there was really not a great deal to suggest that he would be able to do this. So from a pure surprise package, that's one. Now, if you're going down that road again with Sri Lankans, the fact that Hasaranga again is doing very, very well is great to see. But in terms of not really a surprise package, I think a lot of people knew about him. But in terms of, I think if I'd have said before the start of the tournament, which is something that I actually believe, that he's in the top five in the world wrist spinner, the people would have been surprised and be like, really? Are you sure? But actually he is. And I think that he's kind of showing this already now in the World Cup as well.
Dan, I would absolutely agree with that. And again, for those who know me outside of the podcast, a little bit of a Winindu Hasaranga super fan, to be honest. Yep. I wanted him in the test side. He played against South Africa and hopefully one day, I don't care who he plays for in county cricket, I'll make the journey. If he plays for Durham, I'm up at the Riverside. If he plays for Hampshire, I'm making the journey down to the Ajeers Bowl. I don't care. I will travel to the ends of the country to watch Winindu Hasaranga da Silva in action. He is a brilliant, brilliant player. So, to be honest, Dan, it's funny you mentioned Rajapaksa. He was my selection because before this tournament, the guy's 30 years of age, has only played 14 T20 international games. And I believe he'd only scored 150. He'd only ever scored one career 50 in the format. And then in that Bangladesh game, he just came out the blocks firing. It was a fantastic innings. And in particular, that 16th over against Mohammad Saifuddin, again, a very, very enterprising and promising young Bangladeshi seamer.
Yeah.
He just dispatched him. So for me, I've gone with Banuka Rajapaksa. And yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Can he get some more big scores for the Lions in this year's tournament? We shall watch that eagerly as the tournament progresses. But Dan, I think we're pretty much almost coming to an end to today's show. These are only quite short, actually, listeners. I should say that. They are basically just a weekly wrap-up of this year's tournament. But we couldn't end a review show, could we, Dan, without a prediction? And of course, big one for this week, there is a massive game, England versus Australia, Saturday the 30th of September, under the lights at the Ring of Fire in Dubai. Who do you think is going to win that game?
I've got England. I think England are probably 70-30 favourites, actually, to win that, as strong as that. I think England have got more in the locker, batting-wise, and I think that the fifth bowler issue for Australia is quite a considerable problem. And England have dealt better with that in terms of getting the overs out of Mo or Livi as a fifth bowler, a lot better than Australia are doing at the moment with Stoinis or Maxwell. The thing with Maxwell is, generally speaking, I know maybe he didn't show it necessarily today, but generally speaking, he's a good matchup against left-handers. So England's kind of numerous left-handers in that middle order might be pleasant to him to some extent. But we'll see. I think England have got a big edge. They've just simply played a lot better T20 cricket than Australia over a long period of time and have better boundary hitters. It's that simple.
Fair enough, Dan. I'm going to be honest, I'm not as confident. Obviously, I'll always support England, no matter the tournament, the format. I don't care what form we're in. I'm going to say England will win. But I don't know, when the Aussies play in these tournaments, all of a sudden they do become an entirely different side. And I think back to 2019 as well. I know we beat them in the semi-final, but a lot of people expected England to beat Australia in that game at Lord's. And then we all know how it panned out. Australia ended up winning. So I'll say an English victory, but it's T20 cricket. We don't know what's going to happen. And actually, Dan, just one more question before we do wrap up tonight's show. Do you bring Mark Wood in, or do you remain unchanged?
Remain unchanged, definitely.
I would agree, definitely. Tamar Mills hopefully has a good game. I'm looking forward to watching him. Obviously, the wizard as well. Chris Wilks in the power play. His economy rate's been 3.50 runs per over. So wishing the boys nothing but the very best of luck. Hopefully they can secure the W on Saturday against Australia and, yeah, reach the semi-finals just like we did in 2016 and maybe go one step beyond and maybe win this year's tournament. Who knows? We'll find out in the next couple of weeks. But all that's left for me to say, Dan, is thank you very much for coming on tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure. Just before we do head off, do you have anything to plug or promote, your social media channels, for example?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much for having me on, Aaron. Really, really appreciate it. Great to catch up again. You can find me on Twitter at SAAdvantage, and I've been writing a lot on Substack recently as well. So you can check that out on danweston.substack.com. And yeah, feel free to subscribe to that, and the articles go straight into your mailbox. So
yeah, it's definitely worth it for any fellow cricket badgers out there. Dan's content really is brilliant, in particular for me as someone who loves his stats, his analysis, his data. I cannot recommend that highly enough. So, folks, if you want to go and follow Dan on social media and, of course, check out the articles on Substack, we will leave the links to those in the podcast description below. But that is it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for tonight's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.